a warning about bending the Volcker rule, and can Africa's first unicorn tech company revolutionize shopping on the continent? This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Proposals to soften the Volcker rule enacted after the financial crisis to rein in risky trading would give banks more freedom in activities that could be highly profitable, but also a lot riskier. A big portion of the change will impact U.S. financial institutions. But what will it mean for foreign banks wanting to do business in the U.S.? Mark Berman, founder of CompliGlobe, a regulatory advisory, explains.
When the new limit takes effect, banks over a certain amount, what banks are caught? Primarily, it's going to be U.S. banks, the big ones, and a very small handful of global non-U.S. banks that have operations in the United States. So it's a definition test, and then we do a size test. You may be caught by the definition, but you may be under the new $50 billion cap. So if you fall out of those two, this will have no effect on you. Whereas today, you would be caught by the restrictions. Now, firms can go back and do what they were prohibited from doing when the Volcker rule came in 4 years ago, which means, whereas before, banks were no longer permitted to start fires, now banks can start fires, but they need bigger fire extinguishers and more people watching the fire and manning it to make sure the fire doesn't spread.
Are we in danger of forgetting the broader lesson of the global financial crisis? You know, that when you get heavy risks in one market, that can have a domino effect. It can trigger huge losses around the world. In other words, if you exempt even foreign banks, does that expose everyone to more risk?
This is to attempt to deregulate banks on the basis that banks can regulate themselves. In other words, if banks have good risk management, they won't be prone to doing things that cause problems. And in fact, the fundamental core of risk management is don't engage in activities that give a high risk in the first place. This is the second time the controls have relaxed to permit banks to go back and engage in the activities that they engaged in that caused the depression and that caused the financial crisis.
So to sum up, you're saying historically this is not a good idea.
All of the evidence points to a disaster. Effectively, it glosses over the problems. It's politically motivated.
Mark Berman, let's do the numbers. Global markets are rebounding today after being hit earlier this week by worries about Italy's future participation in the Eurozone. The country's main share index is jumping more than 1%. Italian bonds are marking a second day of gains. Now, Brazil is getting back to normal after a nationwide strike almost brought the economy to a standstill. Goods and services are returning to major cities. There are, though, still long lines for fuel and public transport. After 11 days of demonstrations, the strike isn't off officially, but many truck drivers striking against rising diesel prices have returned to work. From Sao Paulo, the BBC's Daniel Gallus reports.
After days of shortages and disruptions, Brazilians are now rushing to get supplies that were out of stock during the strike, like food and fuel. There are long queues outside petrol stations, and many supermarkets still don't have fresh fruit available. Authorities say it will take days or even weeks for everything to get back to normal. On Wednesday, workers in Brazil's oil sector announced a 72-hour strike, but unions say their protests will not aggravate current shortages. Shares for Brazil's state-controlled giant Petrobras, which plays a big part in fuel prices in Brazil, are still down, amidst fears of more government intervention in the market. Officials are also counting up the costs of the crisis. One study suggests Brazil's growth estimate for this year will have to be lowered from almost 2% to around 1.5%. Over 70 million chickens died of hunger because rations couldn't be delivered to farms, and 300 million liters of milk had to be dumped. Brazil's government agreed to subsidize diesel fuel for truckers, and now taxpayers will face a $2.6 billion bill, which will have to be paid through tax increases or spending cuts.
Daniel Gallus. Online shopping with next-day shipping is pretty standard in the US and Europe, but not as common in Africa, something that Jumia, a company dubbed the Alibaba of Africa, is hoping to change as it looks to reach more of the continent's rapidly growing population. The BBC's Su Ping Chan reports.
Not many African companies have achieved so-called unicorn status, but Jumia, which was founded in 2012 with just 3 employees, is now Africa's largest online shopping platform. From payment systems to taxi services, Jumia is changing what African consumers buy and how they transact. Jumia's co-founder, Sasha Boyonek, says there's one product on top of every African's wish list.
The place of the mobile phone in Africa is quite unique, and it's really the first thing that, you know, a young worker or anyone with disposable income would go to. And consumers, they want to get the most out of their money. That is the same as everywhere. The consumers want to have the best.
In a world where convenience is king, one day or even same day delivery has become the norm in places like America and Britain. But in Africa, it's different. A recent pact aims to make trade easier. But in reality, how easy is it to get a package from one side of the continent to the other?
It's between very difficult and impossible today. So not easy at all. We are extremely, extremely excited about the prospects of having more trade between the countries. One of the first asks that I get when I meet with our sellers, and if I go to Algeria, they want to sell in Nigeria and Tunisia. And if I go to Kenya, they want to ship to South Africa and Senegal. If we can make this happen and make those borders more open, it is a great opportunity for the small businesses to do more business and for the consumers to get better quality and better prices.
So what should policymakers work on?
Moving containers from A to B is not the most difficult. The most difficult is to do the last mile and to know the consumer who lives, you know, 50 miles from Abuja somewhere in Nigeria. And then going from the port of Lagos to that consumer is the most difficult part.
That report by Su-Ping Chan. Finally, the world's biggest freshwater pearl will be auctioned in the Netherlands today. The Chinese gem, known as the Sleeping Lion, is nearly 3 inches long and valued at more than $600,000. Amazing history, too. Look it up. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.